There are many things we've learned in the past that were no use and will never survive. But what we had to learn in the past was how to grow. And if we didn't learn that, all the rest was a mistake or a failure. Now, if we have a sneaking suspicion that we do have some unfinished business, and I think we should all believe that we have, because we are all unfinished beings. There is no evidence that the human being has as yet been completed, even in his physical structures or his psychological patterns. He is en route to tomorrow in all cases. And the future involves knowledge, wisdom, insights, and understanding that have to gradually develop over many embodiments. But now is the time to recognize that if there's anything about you that is different from what other people think and have, there's a reason for it. And if you are a person, then as a person, you are growing up in a world of persons. And the growth process has to do with the achievement of cosmic citizenship. It has to the achievement of a completeness of self, which enables us to unfold without restraint the incredible potentials of our own inner lives. All of this true growth comes through the unfoldment of potential, not merely the education of the concrete mind in techniques. It is the person growing up. Now, what is that person really like? How do we know that person? What is this being that we would like to be, and yet we somehow have not even a speaking acquaintance with? Well, probably the answer is that we will never know exactly until we become far wiser than we are now. But there are certain guideposts, there are certain landmarks that can help us to understand. The person that we would like to be, or the being that we would like to equal, is in most cases one of the world's great teachers, one of those who have become the spiritual and philosophical leaders of the race. The great examples, beings like Buddha, Confucius, Christ, all of these great teachers whom we have identified with the highest nobility of our attributes, characteristics, and talents. Somewhere in each of us is this universally learned being. How to get to it, what to do about it, is always difficult. But we also know that the intellect isn't much help. It helps to some things. It helps us to understand the reason for things. It helps us to think through the projections of our own memories. But in some mysterious way, there is another power, the heart, which alone seems to be able to sense the realities. The heart seems to tell us that the works of the mind have limitation, and that the consequences and rewards of mental exertion are often futile. Whereas the rewards of the heart, gradually outgrowing selfishness, outgrowing cupidity, jealousy, hatreds, and all these things, gradually releases us into a larger dimension of existence. So we are all looking for something to help out in these ways, because we do know that we are imperfect. We do know that something more is necessary. Now, in that particular case, how are we going to think about it? Well, to be going back to my first idea, I think the only way to think about that is through a time in which the mind is rescued from these pressures and allowed to think its own thoughts. A mind that has escaped from the tyranny of future ambition. The individual of 80 is not going to be quite as ambitious as the person of 40 or 50. Ambition is not going to force corruption. Ambition is less likely to cause the individual to disfigure his psychic nature. He is not likely to be as selfish, as cruel, or dogmatic, or tyrannical as a person in younger years, simply because his older faculties are instinctively somewhat improved by the experiences of life, whether he knows it or not, whether he realizes it or declines to accept it. The fact remains. So in that period, the individual can really begin to find out what he owes the universe, what is his debt to existence itself, and how he can pay it in the years that he is here. He will know perfectly well that he can't pay it with money, because most people do not have that kind of money, and it wouldn't do it if they had. But he does have opportunities to find out more about his own life. And I think in the early days, this was one of the points that were emphasized in the mystery teachings. Namely, that as we come to the end of mortal existence, we begin to get a flickering glimpse of eternal existence. We suddenly realize that if there is something beyond the grave, then there is hope. If there's nothing behind the grave, then we have wasted and futilized the life. Because nothing that we are having and doing here has sufficient permanence for ourselves or anyone else to justify the cost in the corruption of our own character. So in the older years, the person naturally begins to think, wonder. He begins to, as Carl Jung points out, he begins to get rid of the useless burdens that have bound him to younger years. He is helped to this by circumstances. If he has a family, it has grown up. It is no longer dependent upon him. Therefore, the person, man or woman, who comes to the point of older years does have a special allotment of time enriched by memories and enlightened by experience. Now, the person may not even know this. They may be so busy being sorry for themselves or disliking someone else that it never occurs to them that they have gradually been working up to the real reason for their own lives. And that as long as they are concerned only with the extension of physical matters or feel themselves to be completely comfortable in an embodied condition, these other situations are going to be overlooked or neglected. After we get a little further along, then, we also begin to say, what are the soul factors which we are most likely to neglect in our daily work? One of the soul factors is expense, how to spend what we have. What are we doing in our extravagances or moderate expenditures what are we doing that has significance to the inner life of the person? I think perhaps Muhammad summarized that better than most others in the simple statement at least attributed to him. And when he said, if I had two coats, I would sell one of them and buy hyacinths for my soul. Now, somewhere in this problem, the problem of purchasing soul value comes into pattern. That somehow, no matter how beautiful or extravagant our home is, it is not a home unless the soul power is there. Something has to be transmuted into the love of beauty, the love of good, and the unselfish service of others. Something has to lead us to an eternal faith in the omnipotence of good and the omniscience of all that is necessary to our well-being. This type of thing should start a little earlier so that we have time to build these patterns into our daily living. But for the most part, sufficient to the day is what we want to spend that day, and that is where it ends. But if we can plan things, we can say to ourselves, I am now building up a series of values which I want to understand later. I want to build up also an expression, an action. Most people live vicariously. They think their way through life, or they emotionalize their characters and careers. But every constructive value in life must be supported by an action. There must be something done. There must be a skill developed. There must be a discipline of the body and the mind. There must be a purpose for which we will sacrifice lesser things. Among those lesser things, ourselves. So little by little, by contemplation and the proper use of time, we can begin the process of rescuing perhaps the deserted garden that is within ourselves. We didn't take care of it. We allowed it to go to weed because we were busy taking care of Korea. But now that the Korea problem is no longer pressing, we live in a house, in a garden that needs care. We need to redo the things that we neglected to do. And we have to build back values which bring consolation and comfort to the inner life and are important for an eternal pattern. We can therefore find nearly all the instruction that we need simply by looking back over the years of our own lives. We can remember what happened when we were children, and we can say to ourselves, it was difficult. Some have had a very light and beautiful childhood. Others had a very difficult one. Those who had the happy childhood, what did they do with it? Only they know. Those who had the unhappy life, what did they do about that? They only are the ones who know. It may well be that they have never gotten over that unhappy life, and that's the last thing they're going to remember when they leave here. They never transmuted it. They never understood it. They never learned any lesson from it. It was only a horrible experience which had to be blamed upon the cruelty of others. Actually, all of these experiences, the broken home, the unfortunate marriage, all of these things have meaning. Most of them indicate shortcomings in ourselves, although we usually blame them on other people. But regardless of where the blame lies, what did we do about it? How did we handle it? What did we make out of it that made us better people? What did we do when we found a good friend? What did we do when we realized that our friend was imposing on us? All these values present us with problems. Most of them ignored at the time they happened, but can be restored from memory to form a textbook for the reorganization of our understanding of life, so that we may actually know when we leave this world this time that we are wiser in those choices and decisions which must lead to the final liberation of the human being from the illusions of mortality. So we can say that it's all one pattern anyway, that from the past comes unfinished business, and when we slip out of here in the 80s or 90s or whenever it is, there will be some unfinished business go with us. We will not have solved it all. But have we made one definite step in the direction of restoring our faith in deity, our strength in universal law? Are we more and more firm in ethics and in the integrities of life? Are we convinced of the ultimate victory of life over death and of good over evil? Do we live in a world of inner strength, in which we have gradually weeded out all the weaknesses that might have restricted our growth? If we can say clearly that we have done at least a little of this kind of work, we can face the future with a much better hope. Also, it is an opportunity for many people to understand the world much better. At this time particularly, where political issues are extremely tense, where crises are everywhere in the air, the individual needs a better understanding of humanity than most have. We depend for our understanding largely upon reports, television programs, or the incessant line of books by informed sources. Most of these informed sources are not very encouraging, and they tell us very, very little about the hearts and minds of other people. If we do not like certain people, we can find nothing good in them. If we do not find good, we cannot cooperate. Little by little, our entire environment, which we are supposed to learn to understand, becomes all out of focus and becomes a mass of fears, doubts, hazards, and uncertainties. But in our older years, we can travel a little at least. We can visit some of these places. We can understand them. We can actually enroll in a school if we want to and study international relations or study diplomatic courses so that we gradually get a little idea of the facts of things, because mostly we work from prejudice. and prejudice works from ignorance. We do not understand the great motions of society. We do not know how to cooperate with them intelligently. So we take something and say, this is good, and something else, this is bad, and have a terrible time trying to decide what political candidate we want to vote for, because we're not sure we know that any of them know what they're doing. So all this type of thing we have to do something about. And little by little, we can transform ourselves into knowing mechanisms that have the ability and the skill to solve problems, to understand properly. And the more we understand, the more we can cooperate with life. The less we understand, the more certainly we will compete with everything. So cooperation and not competition is the life of man's inner maturity. Therefore, we say it's good to believe that we have been here before. How else are we going to explain life? How are we going to get any moral value out of the fact that perhaps we inherited some certain negative trait from a remote ancestor who was hung for murder? Are we disposed to believe that this antiquity, this heredity, is going to hang over us for the rest of our lives? Are we going to be the victims forever of things that have made us unpleasant and uncomfortable and for which we never have been to blame? This would make the universe look very strange. It would be amazing indeed if this world was filled with people who were all perfect except for what other people had done to them. That the individual was not to blame for anything. Or, of course, there is another school that simply says, don't worry about it, there never was anything. This doesn't work very well either. It's hard to imagine that a universe so beautifully and mathematically exact as ours had no purpose in its own existence. It is much wiser to believe that it's here for a reason, and that in that universe we are here for a reason. Well, the most common idea of a reason would be the concept of Aquinas, of the restricted or limited individualism, the right of each individual to create his own life and his own destiny. Therefore, we are here apparently to overcome the tendencies to be useless, or to accept dismally the disasters which we ourselves have caused for the most part. If there is a reason, the sooner we get to work on it, the better. We have people who spend a whole lifetime trying to find out who built one of the pyramids down in Babylonia somewhere. We have people who explore every conceivable issue, but we do not have enough people as yet who explore the reason why the human being is unable to cope with his own life. Because he doesn't try hard enough. He doesn't really work at it. He passes it all off as due to unfortunate social conditions. If he has a headache, it's pollution. If he has something else, it's nuclear fission. If he is poor, it's because of Wall Street. If he's rich, it's because somebody else has lost. All these different attitudes are unimportant. The real thing is that we move through a world which we will never be really part of. We move in an environment that changes even while we are changing. We are moving out of a past that we do not remember into a future which we cannot intellectually conceive with any certainty. So in all of this proposition, we have things to learn here and now. And if we're going to happen to have another 15 or 20 years of life in which to learn some of these things, the least we can do is try to learn something good, learn something of the beauty of life, begin to understand the wonders of it all. Look not into the puddles, but look rather into the light and the sky. Begin to take a greater interest in the flowering of a tree than we do in the political machinations of our contemporaries. Let us begin to find the wonders of life and see if we can't find out of all of that something that is a consoling realization of the wonder of our own purpose. We are here for very definite reasons. We are here because it is a blessed privilege to be here. We are here because this is the present step on our road to eternity. We are on a long journey. This is one day. And on this day, like those who travel, we go to Hong Kong to see the sights, we go to Rome to see the Vatican, we go to Egypt to see the pyramids, and we come into birth to see the world around us, to explore it, to examine it, to understand it, and to give credit to those who have helped to make it better and find ways to serve those who have been unable to make it better, but must learn in due time. So if we are here, we are observers. That's what Plato said. They asked him what his profession was. He said, I am by profession an observer. I want to know what's happening. I want to understand it. And each one of us wants to do this in one way or another. We want to take the bitterness out of life and find the reason for it. We want to understand why things aren't always the way we want them to be, but at the same time learning how we can make them a little better. We want to find justice, integrity, and find all this strange mystery of life involved within a divine love that is inevitable and unfailing. We just want to find reason, purpose, meaning. We want to really have a full life and not be forced to look everywhere for an escape from the boredom of our own ignorance. So in this type of thinking, I think that probably one of the best things that the average person could do would be to take the life that he has lived and become his own biographer. He could take a nice little time off somewhere along the line and make an outline of everything that he consciously remembers about his own life. Beginning as far back as he can go, he can put down the credits and debits. He can explain the way he was hurt or the way he felt. He can explain why he believed himself to be understood or misunderstood, usually the latter. He can also, why did he marry that person? Was they right in the way they handled the children? Did they work out a way that was compatible? Did the family itself have closeness, or was it a competition between husband and wife? Do the new children, the grandchildren that come along, are we able to do something with them that is useful? How can we find out day by day what we did that was right and what we did that was wrong and learn to grow from it? Instead, we can turn our own lives into laboratories in which we can keep records of a tremendous complication of procedures and functions. Well, it may be that as we go along, we find so much unfinished business that there's not much chance of our getting through with it even in 20 years. But we can start, and we can gradually become aware of what has been called the importance of living. Lin Yu Tang wrote a book on that subject, this, the importance of living, that regardless of everything else, to be alive is a major circumstance. A very significant experience in the mysterious flow of life. Therefore, to find the importance of living, it must tell us something. Now, if we do take anything with us beyond the grave, if there is a life beyond, it's obvious that most of the things we're doing now are not going to be very meaningful beyond the grave. We may become the greatest banker in the world. But where there are no banks, this is not especially significant achievement. We may decide that we are the greatest artist who ever lived, but we will be brought down to humility when we understand the supreme artistry of creation itself. We may think that we were the ruler of a great nation, that we conquered one nation after another and became high pontiff over all of them. But over there aren't any nations to rule, and there are no armies to fight battles for us. Then we can go into other fields. We learned so very, very hard. We did everything possible so that we could write a great book on the history of the automobile. How it started, when it went to, and how we were able to get a few antique cars that are worth their weight in gold. And as owners, we are famous people. Now, after we depart from here, what does all this mean? Nothing. All that we can take with us would be a memory, perhaps, of the history of antique cars. But out where the sky and the clouds and the mysteries of life are, nobody cares. There's no future in it. If there is a future, because we know something, it's very probable everybody else there knows it too, so there's still no value particularly. What can we take with us that really is going to become a letter of introduction for a new day in the world? What can we take that cannot fail to meet the universal approval? Well, it seems that about all any of us can ever take with us into another life is ourselves, with whatever constructive adjustments we have made with society. If we have developed integrities and values, we can take these with us. We can take lessons we have learned. We can also take various values of religious intensity that we have studied or explored. Only things that benefited conduct, that gave us greater vision and restored the integrities of life in our own souls. Those are the things we have to take with us. And most people haven't had much time to study those subjects and haven't done much studying with it, even if they did. So, while we have lots of time, we can begin to realize what is possible. We can realize that the good deed that we do may recommend us to a better life. The promises that we did not fulfill have no value. But all that is good in nature, all that is valuable, is shared in man's common love of serving his fellow creatures. The individual whose life is dedicated to service has the richest life, the most meaningful life, a life in which a warm, quiet, gentle sympathy with life has become a guiding principle. And when we get out of that terrible rush that most people are in and can settle back, we can begin to love the world, which we have learned to doubt because of our involvement. We also begin to understand through the dispositions of people who have hurt us. We begin to realize that just as they have hurt us, we knowingly or unknowingly have hurt other people. Largely it is due to ignorance. As long as we have the power to hurt and use that power, we are not wise. It is only when we can be good only because we cannot be anything else that we are good. So we can little by little forgive in others that which we still have in ourselves in the form of purposes and projects incomplete. So if we bring with us into a life of karma, that's all right. It's a perfectly good thing to bring along. And we are probably going to have to face it for quite a while to come, because it's not going to get well with the few times and few years we have here all at once. I think that the best way to figure this is that approximately the life wave for humanity, according to those who have given a lot of thought to it at least, is that the human life wave functions in approximately 800 incarnations. In other words, we have 800 visits here in which to do all kinds of things. Now, of course, we're not at the beginning of the visits at this time. We are well into the number. Perhaps if we've gotten to be fairly thoughtful about a number of things, we may have been back 300 times. We've gotten rid of a lot of the very crude mistakes that the ancients made. And now we have to go to work on the sophisticated mistakes that we are making for ourselves. Little by little, however, the individual gains the powers of virtues for which he was fashioned. Somewhere in the future of things, the individual is going to be more than he is now. He is going to be more important than he is now. He is part of the great chain of leaderships, of governorships, and followings that go all the way through space. He is part of a great system which includes all the stars in the cosmos, all the universes, and all the dark holes in them. He is part of something that goes on and has a triumphant destiny. The soul in himself is the thing that, growing up, it will cause him someday to be called forth and rewarded and told that he has been a good and faithful servant, and that now he is going to come into his reward. This becoming a faithful servant leads we do not know where now. Maybe it leads out into space. Maybe someday each of us will be responsible for a star or a planet. Perhaps each of us will create a whole order of life within ourselves, and then, like kindly parents or the great Buddhas of the past, to sit and meditate, protecting the souls that have come out of ourselves. Actually, we're not so far from that if you think about it, because each one of us has inside of himself a race of beings dependent upon him that is more numerous than the stars in the sky. Every cell, every atom, is a little world over which man has a certain government. With a tyranny, he destroys his own body and all the life in it. But someday, it may be his destiny to preside over a creation which has emerged out of his own soul, which is part of himself, and which he must also lead to liberation. All of these things are parts of the great philosophies and thoughtfulnesses of life. And when you're sitting around being a little quiet, we might be able to sacrifice a few commercials for detergents and think about some of these things. It might do us well. Also, it might give us incentives. It might prove to us why it's necessary to do some of these things. Why can't we just all get out of here, lie down, go to sleep forever? Nature simply couldn't do it that way, because nature does not work and build for millions of years to end the thing in a cipher. It is not possible to assume that anything that exists is purposeless. And it is also proper to assume that all purposed things are evolving, revealing more and more of their purpose for existence. Little by little, we are all growing up to the fullness of the purpose for ourselves. It may be a long way off, but we are not little forlorn creatures chased from one jungle to another by circumstances. We are part of a great life wave. When it comes and it seems that wars cut down our youth, when it seems that tyrannies of all kinds interfere with the natural growth of things, we have to realize that nothing is destroyed. Nothing is lost. No lesson is useless or worthless. No suffering is without merit. There is something behind it all. And the sooner we begin to realize this, the happier we're going to be, and the more useful we will become. Then it may well be that between 65 and 80, or 85 or 90, whatever it happens to be, we can really build a complete life, that we can have the life that was denied us when we had to go out and make a living. The first half of our physical existence, we make a living. In the second half, we make a life. And if we do it that way, it may be very valuable. And it also will bring a lot more consolation, and it will bring people closer together, and we will serve each other more honorably and lovingly. And everyone will find that as long as he has an ounce of strength in him anywhere, he can help something or someone. Little by little, therefore, out of helpfulness, we gain an unfoldment of soul power. And the soul in us is forever seeking to become part of that great cosmic soul which has it as its purpose, the salvation of all that lives. We are part of that which is living to be saved. And that is all. We are also part of that power which in the due course of time becomes part of the saving soul of infinity. All these things kind of give us something to think about, make life a little more pleasant, more meaningful, and end boredom. Because when we start to think about these things, the thoughts go on and on and on. There just is no end to the thinking. And as long as all that thinking is beautiful, cheerful, helpful, hopeful, it keeps the life better, maintains health, and the person who in their older years is busy serving truth will have fewer ailments than the person who sits around and does nothing but be sorry for himself or regret his own existence. Good, constructive, idealistic attitudes are valuable in preserving function and helping to make the material life we live happier and wiser, and in many ways help us to contribute to the happiness of our children and grandchildren and everyone involved. There's nothing but that is more helpful than a happy, enlightened, dedicated person. And if we can achieve that after we get through fighting out the struggle of business, we will then have a complete life. But until that, there's quite a lot to be desired. And with the almost certain extension of life, even in spite of all the problems we have, we're living now 3 to 5 years more than we did 50 years ago. Those extra years are something that is a bonus, not just because we can live off Social Security, but because in those years we can begin to live and think and dream and hope without being completely bound into an industrial pattern that may have frustrated most of our lives. So with a little good thinking in that direction, it seems to me we have a lot of possibility for the future. And everyone who studies, as we are trying to study and seeking to know, will find the proof of the value of the study in the fact that they can face the future happily, and that they will find that life is not only necessary, but as Bragdon called it, the beautiful necessity is our life here. It is a beautiful thing if we know how to use it. And the sooner we know how to use it, the more fruitful, the more valuable, the more worthwhile it will become, and it becomes obvious that no matter what it costs us in effort, it's worth it. If the end is the achievement of universal brotherhood and man's unfoldment of his own spiritual resources. Well, I guess that's all we can do this morning. And you are to be congratulated on having 2 lectures this morning. Not everybody has 2 lectures from me in one morning, so I guess that's the way it's going to be. Now, I have a little announcement here I'd like to make in connection with my wife and her work. Most of you know that she is interested in a very serious problem in dealing with the birth of a new age. And that is something that is needed. In the 17th century, we had a new age, which led to the liberation of man's mind from the dismal pressures of medievalism. A new world order seems to be very necessary, and my wife has given nearly 50 years of study and thought to this particular problem. We have here on the table this morning this pamphlet, which is called An Introduction to the Birth of a New Age, which is really a very brief summary of 4 volumes of work which she has done. And the volumes are not available at this time, but a pre-publication copy of these first 2 volumes can be seen in our library. It is available and has to do with the first aspects of her studies. And this pamphlet can be purchased at in our gift shop, and we hope that if you're interested, and I think you will be, in the great problem that is involved, namely the birth of a new age, and how we are going to gradually build this better way of life, which is necessary as we see the piling up of confusion and complexity. So we suggest this to your consideration, and thank you very much, and hope to see you again pretty soon.